Honourable Member, Honourable Minister, Deputy Minister, Director General, the Commissioner for Revenue Services. It is always important to mention and take note of your presence, precisely because the issues that we'll be talking about today and receiving a briefing on has much to do with the ability of the institution that you lead under the capable leadership of the minister also at the same time. Honourable members, welcome. Media people present here, you're also welcome. The chair or acting chair of the Finance and Fiscal Commission, that's so, Bongani, you're also welcome. The rest of the team that is under the leadership of the Director General and the Finance Family as a whole, we would want to take this opportunity to welcome you to this very, very important meeting after yesterday's presentation on the medium-term budget policy statement by the Minister of Finance, which I believe has been well received. And let me extend my congratulations, Minister, and your team for the manner in which you presented the budget yesterday. But obviously the detail is for us to interrogate and make sure that we go back to the House to present a report that was informed by our own understanding of the issues that you presented yesterday. I must indicate that we also have amongst ourselves here representatives of provinces. I know Eastern Cape is here, Gauteng officials are here, Limpopo, our Free State is also present here, and the Western Cape. And the Western Cape.
Northern Cape has got officials here.
Northern Cape has got officials present here. I think I must say up front that we were all there. We have heard the comments and so on and so forth. We are not expecting the minister to re-deliver the medium budget policy statement to the committee today, but to take us through the salient points of the budget itself, and also just to give us his overview in terms of the presentation itself. The rest to be an engagement between us and the team, not the minister per se. And also, as you might be aware, that he has been very, very hectic in the past few weeks. There are still other commitments that the minister has to fulfill today. At some point, we might have to release him. But I think by that time, honorable members would have utilized the opportunity to be with him in this committee meeting to ask as much as we can in terms of seeking clarity. I must also say, Minister, it is a sitting of all the finance committees. To my right, I've got Charles Dibie, Ndate Chani, and Honorable Sogoni is sitting somewhere. He has decided to play five. I'm sure if he did that in the Bafana, Bafana would have qualified. Minister, over to you and your team. Thank you, and welcome once more.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson and Chairpersons, and honourable members and colleagues from the provinces and everybody else that the Chairperson has welcomed. what we've agreed with the chair is that you've actually read everything yesterday and heard everything yesterday, so I'll just refresh your memory briefly, and that we should then focus on an engagement with yourselves rather than repeating things that you would have heard already. So in summary, what were we saying? We were saying firstly that there is a recovery process that has been following the 2008-2009 recession. That recovery is now endangered by the events, particularly with its epicenter, as everybody says, in Europe. And of course, later today, Chair, if you had this meeting this afternoon, we would have known whether the European leaders that are meeting today have emerged with some kind of solution to the challenges that they actually have. Secondly, we are saying that the crisis within the recovery is having ripple effects throughout the world, that in our own case, we had a very good first quarter of 4.5% growth. Second quarter came down to 1.3%. And of course, the third quarter, we don't know yet. And our own estimate for this year is 3.1%. We think that in these circumstances, we've also had a reduction in revenue. At this stage, we're estimating that some 13 billion rands will be under-collected, and that this, of course, has an impact on the fiscal framework. We are proposing that we increase the fiscal deficit from 5.3% to 5.5%, and that extra borrowing will help us to sustain ourselves during this period. We're saying in terms of economic strategy, what we need to do is to focus on a investment-led approach, meaning invest in the economy, invest in infrastructure, invest in on the capital side, both in terms of maintenance and new infrastructure, and that investment will help to keep the economy going. At the same time, we're saying that we are managing our debt trajectory in a way in which, although we reach 40%, of debt GDP by 2014, 2015, or slightly beyond that, we see that tapering off, and we see the deficit tapering off in the outer years as well. And so we're doing two things during this time. We're saying sustain growth, because government has been, not only in South Africa, but elsewhere in the world, playing a very important part in sustaining growth while the private sector has retreated in the face of the recession. At the same time, ensure that there is a credible fiscal consolidation path as we go forward, because there will be another crisis sometime in the future, and we've got to make sure that we create what we call the fiscal space to be able to react in the way we did in 2008. If you remember, we were in 1% surplus. We were able to then borrow and work our way out of that part of the crisis and work our way into the future. In order for the investment-led approach to succeed, from a government point of view, we've got to take a serious look at the composition of expenditure. And the composition of expenditure means if we're spending money on interest payments, which is the fastest growing item on our books at the moment, and if that increases further as it would for the next 2 or 3 years, it will crowd out other forms of expenditure. So there's interest payments, there's compensation, there's goods and services, and of course, there's investment in capital projects themselves. And by composition, we're saying, look at the percentages that are being spent on each of these areas, and how can we reallocate money to the focus on investment in infrastructure, which will have, if you like, the stimulatory effect on the economy. We're also saying that in order to take us there, we need to create what we did last year, and colleagues will remember that, a policy reserve. And by policy reserve, we mean basically creating a little pot somewhere and then asking the question, who's going to contribute to filling that pot? And there are a number of suggestions and ideas that will be worked on in the course of the next month. And amongst those would be, are there cash surpluses within the state, and how do we utilize the cash surpluses? I see already in this morning's papers some entities are very quickly saying, we have a project coming and so on. So they should take a message back that that's not going to be very helpful in trying to protect money we have, because there's a very simple message to everybody within the broader state, which is that you cannot have cash surpluses sitting in one part of the state and another part of the state borrowing. That's not good cash management, and that's not a good way to manage our fiscus. So they'll be also get used to this idea. I see many people here don't need a haircut, but there's a concept of the haircut, which the European situation has popularized as well. And last year, you remember, we did a 0.3% haircut, which gave us 6 billion rands over 3 years, which was allocated to higher education and training. So in sum, we have a difficult environment. We have reducing revenue. But we have opportunities to focus on investment and to rally resources, both from within the state and from within the private sector, to get this investment process going. Some of you are going to ask, so let me anticipate it, but you already have under expenditure on the investment side in infrastructure. That is true. So the answer to that is that we are now making extraordinary efforts to make sure that we get better planning processes in government, we get a pipeline of projects in government, that we assist various levels and entities within government to develop the capacity to actually deliver better. And clearly what we require is a more effective partnership, as we had during the Soccer World Cup, between the private sector and the public sector to move these infrastructure projects on much faster. And you'll see more emerging from the Presidential Commission on Infrastructure as well, which will help us to move faster in respect of some of these matters. So, Chair, all in all, you know what the allocations are, you know what the rollovers are, you know what the adjustments budget says in respect of allocations to various areas. And the last area I want to mention in that regard is the 25 billion rands over 6 years at this point in time for the competitiveness economic support package. And again, that's an area where if we can find more money, we'll put more money in. And the idea is to increase the competitiveness, for example, of the manufacturing sector in South Africa, and ensure that they are able to compete out there in the world that is very competitive at this point in time. But it can't only be about supporting existing businesses as they are. It's about changing them as well so that they can actually go out there and make a go of competing with other players on the African continent and on other continents as well. But equally, if the situation that we find ourselves in gets any worse, then we'll have to use both these resources and other resources we set aside around 2009 to defend jobs, to make sure that workers are not retrenched, to make sure that enterprises continue in some form or the other, let alone finding additional ways to grow business and social enterprises in South Africa as well. So if I can close with that, Chair, and take the questions and comments that colleagues have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. Can I take hands? Honorable Van Rooyen, followed by Madlamini, Honorable Gorenwolf, Swart, Honorable George, Honorable Honorable Liz, is that your new name? Mazamba. Okay. All right. Okay. Now, I'll come back to the next round. Let's take questions in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just go to questions because I think time is not on our side. Chair, my first question is on the gap that has been acknowledged by the Minister on this issue of our expenditure that we are realizing in as far as infrastructure investments are concerned. I think, Chair, the reason of the matter is that we have been sitting with this problem for quite some time, and every year we undertake to do something to tackle this. And the rest of the matter is that if we are going to move in dealing with this aspect, we will continue to limp in as far as more especially aspects of economic infrastructure are concerned. Now, one of the key things that has emerged is the shortage of the required skills, hence high under-expenditure. I'm not sure if there's any concerted effort or a focus way in which we are dealing with this problem. Because from where I am of the opinion that our approach is very sluggish. We seem not to be having a focused approach to issues of challenges of skills development in our country. And as a result, I mean, we continue to incur major cost getting, obviously, expats, I mean, from abroad, I mean, to come and assist us in some of these areas. Secondly, Chair, we have been talking about this moderation in the growth of the unit labor cost, that is your wage moderation. I appreciate if I get to know what is the progress in this, because in our last financial year, there was an undertaking that there will be a collective, obviously, platform that will be used, I mean, to lobby for this. But it seems as if we are not getting anywhere. Well, one must appreciate the fact that one trade union recently came up with a very, very progressive attempt, I mean, to deal with wage moderation. But I don't get the impression that there is a national scope of dealing with this problem. It seems as if it's just a discretionary thing that is left to individual unions. I'm not sure if we can just get an update as to efforts that are being made to ensure that we arrest this particular situation. And lastly, Chair, I know in our last engagement, Minister, we are made to believe that ODA is quite insignificant, I mean, for South Africa as a country, for us to consider it as a source of revenue. But the rest of the matter is, insignificant as it might look, it might be made to be. The rest of the matter is, ODA can assist in terms of addressing some of our challenges. And definitely, it's important for us as parliamentarians, I mean, to be taken on board about what are the flaws, the ODA flaws that are coming into our country, and what are they used for, how, to what extent are they assisting us to address some of the challenges that we are faced with. And obviously, we are continuing the old trend of not including it as part of the resource or as part of our revenue, something that can be brought to Parliament for us to interrogate it. I just want to once more check with the Minister. What is the Minister's take going forward? Because we have the opinion that ODA must be part and parcel of a revenue that is there for the country to use in terms of addressing some of the development challenges that we are faced with. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Minister and his team. My clarity, Chair, and co-chairs will be more based on the fiscal guidelines, which indicates that those are our fiscal policies. The Minister indicated during his speech that efficiency is one of crucial factor to ensure that we try and sustain our debt sustainability. Now, having said that, Minister, two of your colleagues yesterday, we really applaud for them because you acknowledged that they've done something, assisting with some discipline as far as management of their departments is concerned. Now, how then do you assist with the rest of the government department? Because the spending, government spending, if it's not properly managed, we are not going to be able to achieve that debt sustainability. Secondly, indeed, if we make a shift towards the bulk infrastructure, we might achieve something. But how possible it is to shift even the way we are investing, rather than focusing on the at the Europe and the other countries. Why don't you just focus on the intra-regional investments? Because I think that's where this bulk infrastructure can assist us to generate some revenues for us. We have seen that, Honourable Minister, we are where we are because of what is happening with the Eurozone crisis. Because of the exports that are being affected in South Africa. Now, the question is, having said that, we can we make some other can you and your colleagues at the trade and industry review the industrial policy and see if whatever that was said within this industrial policy, some other measures can be taken so that we make the shift as far as whom are we trading with, at what percentages are we receiving the rates, the rating thereof. Can we make improvement towards those trading rates percentages? Last chair, Honourable Minister, we also very, very concerned about the three figures, the 5.5 of the increased fiscal deficit and the 3.1 GBT, GDP growth, less than what was projected. I really don't know. I am also not too sure, but my mind is telling me that we are indeed in a serious problem. Unless you are saying there is going to be a port, but who is going to bring up potatoes, you know, like the honourable member from Newcastle, he calls himself potato. Who is going to bring the who is going to bring in that port? I'm asking you a question which I think you also don't know where you're going to get the money, but hoping that SARS is still doing that good compliance, maybe they can help, but indeed we are worried. Thank you, Honourable Chairs.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. My questions will be a little bit more specific. On the stabilization of our state debt, you know, previously it was said that it will stabilize around 2014. Yesterday, or you hinted this morning that it might be maybe a little bit later. In a reply on your behalf, the National Treasury indicated about 2 weeks ago that it will be in 2015-16. So I just want clarity on that. When do you expect the debt, state debt, to stabilize? And then secondly, in the statement yesterday, you've said that you believe that our bond market is highly liquid and deep. Now, I think that is correct to say up until end of August, that was the case. I think you've sold about 50 billion worth of bonds. But in September, it turned just like that. And when the rand sold off 15% of its lowest point, effectively wiping out the carry yield pickup by the foreign investors in that month, and 14 billion were sold in the latter part of September back by the foreign investors. And my information is that we are struggling now to get investors to take up the 1.52 billion we put out every month. Is that a concern? And then lastly, in terms of the state wage bill, that is a concern, and we all agree on that. The 5% of the unions are coming out fighting already around the 5%. They say nothing less than inflation. We know inflation is going up, so that is a concern. Is it not time to say to South Africans that the higher paid categories will get less and the lower paid categories more? But we're not going beyond 5%. So, unfortunately, the Director Generals might say for the next 3 years, nothing, no increases, and the lower wages in the civil service get 6%, so we can get away with a gap between the rich and the poor.
Honourable Sant.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just glad to see you. leaking outstanding, and it seems to be a systemic problem arising in the public financial system, and this is very worrying. What is the Treasury going to do to stop this rot and make sure that this doesn't carry on happening and that the people that perpetuate these crimes are held to account and removed from the system? And then finally, I'm not alarmed about the deficit or about the reduction in GDP growth right now, but I'm wondering about how realistic your projections are for 12, 13, and 14. Bear in mind the economic circumstances in the global economy, because if they're not correct, it's going to be extremely difficult to manage the deficit down. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Through you to the Minister. Mr. Minister, you referred to reforms to improve quality of regulation. I wonder if you're able to give us a little bit more on what exactly that means. Does it mean a reduction in regulation? I'm not sure what improved quality of regulation really means to those of us who have to deal with that regulation. Then you talk about strengthening the labour market institutions to support faster growth. Would that be the kind of agreement that was reached between SACTU and the local textile cut, make and trim guys? Or is there something else there that you're talking about? Now, with regard to that particular agreement, it's been touted as being a breakthrough, and I think it probably is. But the fact is that in Newcastle over the last 3 weeks, we've lost 7,000 odd jobs in the cut, make and trim textile industry because of wage issues primarily. And so that's a huge loss for the economy generally, but for the Newcastle economy, of course, it's devastating. And would this kind of thing be addressed, particularly in the $25 billion you mentioned just now, trying to avoid employees being retrenched? So perhaps some more detail about how this $25 billion is going to be spent. For instance, I see nothing about first-time work seekers and any subsidies or allowances for those, whether through the tax regime or direct. Mr. Minister, indeed, SARS have done a very good job, but the fact is that revenue is down, and there are instances. I'll give you one where I tried to pay an amount of $123,000 about 3 months ago, and it took me, due to an error in SARS, 3 months to pay the money in. I wanted to pay the money. And so I'm now drilling down into the details. The Commissioner always knows I do when I come here, and I say, you know, we've got to make sure these kind of glitches don't happen. That was 123,000 rand that sat in our bank account that should have been in SARS's bank account. It was in advance. It wasn't due, but we wanted to clear it and deregister a company and so on. But those are the details. But the fact is that we couldn't pay it because the system didn't allow us to pay it. And every time I phoned, I was told, no, it's being dealt with. So there are these glitches that are happening, and if it's happening in one case, surely it's then happening in more cases. And again, I say to you guys that e-filing system needs to be refined, I think. So as good as it is, let me just say, Mr. Chairman, through you, I congratulate SARS. I mean, if you go back 10 years or longer, 10 years is enough probably. I mean, what a marvelous improvement e-filing has made. But I think there might be revenue losses there, perhaps even losses. Chairman, through you to the Minister, the question of economic development zones. You quite rightly talk about industrial development being central to sustainable growth. There's a lack of detail there about exactly how we're going to stimulate this. Is it part of the $25 billion? If so, how are we going to do it? Are we going to concentrate on the existing IDZs, or are we going to broaden this? Is there any, have you got any detail on that? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Chair. I see the members have done their homework, so that's good. Honourable Van Rooyen, the challenges around under expenditure. Your comments are fair. And remember that to many of the colleagues here, that Treasury dishes out the money. Somebody else is supposed to spend it. And nonetheless, I think the changes that we will see will be the following. One is that in the next 6 months or so, we'll begin to see this pipeline of projects beginning to develop, so that we don't wait for money, then develop a project, and so on. So that approach is more than likely to change, and we'll see some results in that regard. Secondly, I think we will see a better sense for how the public and private sector could work together as effectively as they've done in some instances in the past in relation to the projects that lie ahead. I mean, it's already happening now. But if a dam is being built, it's built by the private sector. It's not built by a government. The government provides the money and the specs, if you like. Similarly, whether it's in Transnet or Eskom or anywhere else, it's the private sector that actually does the work. What we are now talking about is how do we accelerate some of that, and how do we focus that investment in places where you do have what might be called the multiplier effect on the economy itself. Secondly, more efforts are being made to, and this was pointed out yesterday, to get the IDOP program, for example, extended to its next phase. Some provinces haven't done too well in terms of welcoming this process, but there's still efforts to build up provincial capacity. Thirdly, through the DBSA and CN Zamanje and other efforts, there's intentions and programs at the moment to see how municipal processes could be speeded up as well. Fourthly, there's more work to see if we could get skills to the places where they're required, not necessarily now in every municipality, but perhaps at a district level. So a number of municipalities could actually share those skills as well. So that's the support work. There's Minister Nzimande is working on the skills development side, and there are efforts to, in terms of the skills accord that has been signed with business and labor, to see how we could speed up the development of artisans and how we could upgrade the FET colleges and the kind of output that we get from them as well. So your point is fair, Honourable Member, and these are some of the efforts that are going in to improve our own situation. A number of colleagues have asked about, let's call it wages, wage moderation, the clothing and textile workers example. I think all we need to say from our side is that clearly when we are confronted with difficult situations which threaten jobs, which threaten enterprises, and there's a difficult climate externally and internally as well, then labor and business need to put their heads together. And the prime objective, as I said earlier on, should be how do we keep workers at work, and how do we stop enterprises from closing. And I imagine that there are lots of these initiatives happening at the moment, not all of which we are hearing about, in an effort to actually achieve those objectives, and we must encourage that. Because those are the agreements within the work environment that can be best reached in that environment, rather than prescribed from elsewhere, because each sector will be different, each firm will be different, but the spirit that should pervade our situation is one which says, let's work together to develop formally, which will help us to survive this crisis and go beyond the crisis. That's what countries like Germany did with post-2008. And they did remarkably well until the European crisis itself began to worsen and their export market began to decline, as a result of which they are now facing a slowdown as well. On the question of ODA, what we will do, Chairperson, is to have our ODA people give you a full list of what happened, say, over the last 2 years, so that you know fairly transparently what are the numbers, where do they go. Remember, Treasury only acts as a conduit in many ways and as a liaison department. But let's give you an undertaking that we will let you have that. It's not a significant amount in the overall scheme of things. So if you're looking at spending R1 trillion next year, ODA will be a very small part. Even the percentage will be hard to calculate. My deputy minister says less than 1%, I think significantly less. So let's offer to give you that. Honorable Duvasana, how do we get... We can't really assist government departments. This is now, if you like, a cultural change that we require. A number of other members have raised wastefulness and so on within departments. We need leadership from politicians. We need leadership from directors general. We need leadership from senior public servants. And we need a recognition that we could do better with our own money if we do the right things. And all of us need to, particularly from the parliament side, put a lot more pressure to have senior civil servants and the accounting officers accounting a lot more for what they do and what they don't do. And we need a lot of conversation in terms of what modesty means and what moderation means, particularly given the difficult times that we find ourselves in. And so, again, I think the direction we're going in is right. We've pointed out that these are the challenges, and we've pointed out what are the options. I think the rest of us now need to pick them up. What happens is that we just listen to this the 1 minute, and the next minute we carry on as we are. And so unless we get a serious culture shift in the way we do business, so to speak, and so if we're taking delegations overseas or to another part of the country, I mean, you know, instead of taking 10 people, can we take 3? And instead of staying 2 nights, can we stay 1 night? And instead of hiring an E-class whatever or whatever we're hiring, can you hire 1 level lower or 2 levels lower? So those are all choices we make. You can't prescribe all of these choices. So there's a conscience that must come into this as well, that we need to build into our approach to these sorts of issues. You asked about DTI and Treasury and whether there should be a shift in trade. Minister Davies is certainly looking at that area. And there's no doubt, if we carry on trading in the direction we're trading, and those economies are going to be in trouble for the next couple of years and growing no more than 2%, then we're not going to have a demand factor that's being created in respect of our economy. So clearly diversifying trade is a huge responsibility that all of us have, and all of you need to become ambassadors for trade as well, so that we can expand the range of options that we have. But remember, training is one thing, and I repeat this many times. We've got to also, many of you I'm sure are business people in one way or another, or connected to it. You don't just trade, you trade with something that people want on the other side, at a price and a quality that people want it at as well. And so what is it that we have to offer? How many of our businesses are still stuck, if you like, in an oil mode? And how many of them are agile, active, alive to the possibilities around us, and are willing to innovate and take risks to actually take up some of the opportunities, even in our own backyard within the African continent, is a challenge that we need to look at. You say you're worried about the deficit. No, don't worry. We'll manage it for you. If it gets worrying, we'll tell you to lose some sleep. But right now, you can relax. Honorable Kurnov, the DG will address some of your numbers questions, but I don't think you need to be as anxious as you appear to be as well. On the state wage bill, I think you make an interesting point, in terms of saying, here's a new reality we're faced with. Can we be constructively imaginative about how we cross the bridge for the next 2 or 3 years, and when better times come, we can do better things for ourselves. So some of the ideas that you've put forward about the higher paid and lower paid, I think, is extremely useful, and hopefully will be taken into account. Honorable Swart, Mini Kodesa, there are discussions going on as part of the social dialogue, business, labor, community, and government. It's produced 2 or 3 accords, as I indicated earlier on. And we hope that through that process, which includes NEDLAC processes as well, we begin to tackle some of the issues that we've all been referring to. And if we don't, then we will be selling ourselves short and not adapting to the environment around us and trying to create opportunities for us to actually grow. Should the resources of the SIU and others be increased? That's part of a budgeting process, as you know. I think they do receive extra funds, but we'll look at that as we go towards the budget itself. The Commissioner will handle your revenue question that you've raised. Honourable George, not sure which one you said is there a plan, but let me choose the investment and consumption change. Our first plan is to bring to the attention to all of you and others that in a restricted environment, we've got to start looking at composition of spending. Secondly, we're bringing to your attention that what the economy needs right now is an investment-led approach. Thirdly, we are saying that in terms of changing composition, we have to understand that we require reprioritization. So even within the parliamentary processes, through perhaps the work that Mr. Sogoni's committee is going to be doing, we need to ask the question, are there resources in place X that can go to Y? We need to ask the question, are the projects that you want to do in the next year absolutely necessary, or can we defer them by a two-year period so that more can go into investment? Thirdly, we need to ask the question, is this consumption expenditure of yours really necessary? Can you redirect some of this into more capital expenditure? So I think Parliament can play a very big role if we get aligned around this approach. And Chair, I'm hoping that the committees that are represented here today will help us to get that alignment going. So the plan is to get a wider conversation. The plan is to get a wider understanding. The plan is to now get into the details, which we will do in the course of the next month, in preparation for the budget, and go beyond that as well. And as we indicated yesterday, we will also look for the cash resources, for non-core assets, and other areas from which resources can be mobilized as well. So there is a plan. We now need to go and execute that plan. A number of opposition parties, Chairperson, have been raising the NHI question. I don't understand why. There's no immediate risk of a fiscally unsustainable process emerging. The Minister of Health has said very clearly that this is a 14-year process, that the first 5 years is going to be about rehabilitating and reconstructing and enabling the public health sector to actually completely change the quality of health care that it offers. Secondly, as we indicated yesterday, the Minister of Health from April 2012 will be implementing 10 pilot projects in terms of 10 areas where these activities will be undertaken so that we can begin to learn what does it mean to upgrade public health facilities. Thirdly, yes, there is work that is happening at the moment, and as soon as we are able to have some certainty about what the options might be, we'll certainly make that available. So this is no secret process. This is work that requires a fair amount of diligence. It needs to take into account different views and different models that people are actually using. And the last point I want to make, which hopefully is also reassuring, is we indicated to you that we are going to develop, if you like, a longer-term fiscal framework so that we can think in 5- and 10-year terms now, because the NHI or Social Security reform or even infrastructure is our long 10-year projects that we are talking about. So how do we make all of these things sustainable within the kind of fiscal guidelines that we've actually put out? So from a government point of view, we are absolutely committed to working within a sustainable framework, making sure that the guideline around intergenerational debt management is implemented as well, and making sure that sustainability lies at the heart of whatever we do. In terms of how do we hold more people to account? Well, I think Parliament is best place to hold people to account. And the question is, with all the plethora of information we have, are we doing enough to hold people to account? What we want to do from our side, and the Accountant General is here, so he might want to comment on that, is that we're certainly looking at amendments to the PFMA, which would hold or lay greater accountability at the door of officials as well, and politicians who might make some of these decisions. And where some of these things reach gross levels, we need greater sanctions than we might have at the moment. So the Accountant General might want to comment on some of this, Chair. The deficit projections for 12, 13, and 14, you say you have some doubts about that. All I want to say at this stage is what the last 3 years should have taught all of us is that there's absolutely no way of predicting where we're going to be in a year's time with absolute certainty. So all we can say is here's the trajectory that we want to follow if the conditions that we think are going to unfold are going to unfold. And within that, we require an element of adaptability and agility. And we need to understand that we're going to work within a sound, sustainable framework. And that is what will carry us through this particular period. There is no way we can lay down steel tracks, none of us, whichever party we come from. And we are being extremely transparent. South Africa is still number one in transparency, am I right? In terms of the budget documentation process. So remember that. We are extremely transparent, and I think it's in the interest of all of us that we put the facts on the table, we stare those facts down, and then ask ourselves, how do we manage the economy and the fiscal situation within this environment, and how do we live within that environment as well? So be assured, Dr. George, that, again, I don't want you to lose sleep, you see. And have insomnia. The Honourable Lees, I'm not sure which quality of regulation you're talking about, but if it's to do with financial regulation, is that what you're referring to?
Mr. Chairman, if through you to the Honourable Minister, page 18, continuing investment in network infrastructure. Complementary reforms to improve the quality of regulation, sir.
Ah, okay. There's many references, Chairperson, to regulation.
My apologies.
No, that's fine. The issue here is around one of, for example, administered prices and the way in which regulatory authorities approach that. The DG, again, might want to address that. So this is not about reducing regulation, but having appropriate regulation, having consistency in regulation, and making sure that the basis of decisions that regulatory authorities make are economically sound and take into account all the factors that do need to be taken into account. But if the DG wants to add, he can add to that. Strengthening labor market institutions. I mean, essentially, it's a well-known fact that in South Africa, for example, accessing jobs is not easy for many people in this country. And so we do have labor market institutions, but they don't necessarily reach everyone. We have information in the labor market, but it doesn't reach everyone either. So there are gaps, if you like, between those who might be seeking work and those who might be offering work. That's just one example. So I think there is potential to increase access, increase information, and increase the reach, if you like, of some of these institutions. I've addressed the SACTU issue already. SARS, the Commissioner can address that. And economic development zones, I'll ask Mr. Donaldson to give you some insights into what we have in mind there. Chair, I'm going to leave in about 5 minutes, if that's okay. But if there's any urgent question, I'll take it before.
Yeah, I have noted some few hands. Can I know those hands?
Mashile.
Mashile? Luyange. Yeah, let me just read them.
Dr. Nene first. Mashile, Lungene, Mashile, Rabi, Marie, and Van Rooyen.
I think it's Dr. Luyenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Lungeni.
You won't understand my answer.
Okay. read this one.
Mashile.
Okay, Hoshi Mashile, you'll follow. It's Luyenge, Mashile.
Dr. Rabi. Mr. Marie.
Niels van Rooyen. In that order.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Let me be briefed and ask the question that relates to the feedback that Treasury should be getting from the industries and companies that are who are beneficiaries of the ITC support. Are there any reports that are being received from those companies? And the other one, Chair, is around the unemployment fund. Is there any mechanism that can be agreed upon that will enable the Treasury in order to sustain the unemployment insurance fund by a pre-exit strategy or capacity building to those people who might leave their employment, because when they get out there, they become too young to get social grants and too old to get further employment. And lastly, Chair, is the issue that relates to infrastructural development, especially for young people. Is the Treasury not considering ring fencing the component that is meant for sports facility development, because it is not a priority on the municipalities? There are other priorities that municipalities have, and in the Department of Sport and Recreation, there is completely no funding that is actually looking at this need. Thank you.
Let me just say, honorable members, we will take all these questions. I did say at the beginning that there's a team that the minister is with. He'll respond to those that he can respond to within a very short space of time, and then we'll continue with the deputy minister and the team. Can we also assist by making sure that you go straight to the questions? I know we want to elaborate much more, but I think we're still going to have enough time in our committee to deliberate these issues. Can we take Mashile, Hoshi?
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Mine, I think I wanted to check with the minister, you know, it's on the politics of these rollovers, inclusive of the physical dumping that is done by national departments. And actually the perceived naughtiness of the receiving departments as well, of course inclusive of the environment. And the question relating to the compensation, the actual practical steps, especially given the troubles that we find ourselves in when it comes to the wage negotiations, whether this capping is going to be easy, how is it going to be done practically? And the third issue is the lot of money that is stashed by local municipalities into investments, into the banks, actually borrowing other people the money that they're supposed to be spending for service delivery, while we are actually forced to borrow money when they have actually stashed money. What can be done about that? And the moratorium on the toll roads, how is it going to affect the spending, given the under expenditure that we are experiencing just now? And of course, is the commissioner will talk to the issue about the percentage of our revenue which is made by penalties. What sort of percentage is that? And if there is any trend, how is it going, and how is it being managed? And how does it impact on our revenue collection? Thanks, Chief.
Honourable Ravi.
Thank you, Chair. Minister, first of all, just a general comment. I think this is a very cautious money budget, but I think it's laudable. I think this is really something that we can be proud of. But in your, I think you mentioned something like, I think it's almost 15.2 million South Africans are dependent upon social grants, and it's almost 11% of our total budget. You also mentioned, though, that 2.8 million South Africans have given up hope for work or something. They're not really trying their best or doing anything to try and get work. My question to the Honourable Minister, isn't it possible to put some incentives to this particular portion of South Africans? It's a quite high figure, and I think many of them are young people. Isn't it possible that we can encourage them or incentivize them to obtain work, because it's very dangerous. I mean, you cannot have almost 3 million people which has given up hope for work. Thank you, Chair.
Thank
you, Chair. Minister, just linking to what some of my colleagues have said, I think in terms of affordability of everything, we have seen that 3.1% GDP is very moderate. And we know that SARS can have an optimal recovery of revenue. We can have fantastic management of our expenses. But if the economy doesn't generate the revenue that you need to grow and pay for everything, then you can have the best plans in the world, and you will not be able to fund that. You have cautioned us in this policy statement of yours that the funding of the new growth path, the priorities might be under pressure. We know that currently the funding of the land reform process is enormously under pressure, and it seems like there's not enough money for that. And that links to what my colleague has asked about the national health insurance. Yes, it's a long-term project, but we also know that we needed a 7% GDP to get to 5 million jobs in 2020. And we know that currently there are about 7 million that is looking for jobs. How on earth will we be able to fund this with even a growth as you have projected to 4%? It is still far, far, far from a GDP, from a growth that we can fund everything. And that is a question that one asks, that yes, you have cautioned and you have said that if something happens in Europe, in the Eurozone and in America, then, you know, things might stagnate and all those things. Those are all the variables that we must look at. And those are the things that bring us to ask these questions. How affordable are all these things?
I think you have made your point.
And then on the wage subsidy, you've not mentioned nothing on the wage subsidy. And we would have liked to hear your views whether that is coming up, because quite a lot of youngsters can be employed in that. Then the last one is about investments. You've clearly indicated that emerging markets is suffering from portfolio investments. And I think colleague Kuernoff has indicated that we are running a huge risk at the moment. But we don't see strong action plans and incentive plans for FDIs. We have seen that Angola, I think last year, got $10 billion, where we got about $1 billion of FDIs. How do you foresee that we can change that over to bring certainty and confidence to possible investors? Because currently, it seems like they are getting more reluctant to invest in South Africa.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. The first one is in connection with the optimal collection of revenue in provinces. I think if you look at and the ministers also referred to the current economic situation that we are in, I think it's about time that provinces now also optimize their revenue collection. And I'm worried about the fact that there is not Treasury regulations is not really addressing this. And I think that the Treasury should really look at that so that the provinces do assist in their own revenue collection. And that's also referred to local government. I think it's encouraging to look at the local government budget expenditure review, where they raise some of the issues of local government in promoting efficiency in the revenue collection. But the lack is there is no regulations and treasury regulations to ensure that. The second issue is around the issue of the changing of the composition of spending. Now, the minister is correct to say that we should finance investment, and then he refers to maintenance and refurbishment, which I think is the right way to go, because that is a perfect entry level for emerging contractors to come into the market. But the problem is, I don't know if DTI is ready to assist the emerging contractors and the SMMEs to take up this opportunity. So I just want to have the comments from the minister on those two issues. Thank you.
Man, be quick. I know.
Minister, my request would be, when you're doing the review of the PFMA, to do an analysis of the consequence of creating autonomy to accounting officers and the impact that has on governance, and how that then has a negative consequence on the manner in which you can control the funds and control the manner in which national policy is implemented at a provincial level. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Maybe just before you respond, I just want to indicate that the bulk of the questions are also comments in terms of what needs to be done to improve what the police statement is saying, but also to indicate that we're still going to have a second round engagement after tea, where the Deputy Minister, the Director General, will be here to take the process forward. And let me also say to honourable members that you would note that be aware that today is Diwali. It is a Christmas, some sort of Christmas for Hindu people in this country. So I just wanted to say, more on a serious note, that we should wish these people a very, very good happy Diwali. So I just wanted to make sure that before the minister leaves, we also do this in his presence. Minister, I'm sure you also hear the thirst and the quest for more engagement with National Treasury and yourself in particular. But we understand that this is the beginning of a process. We'll continue to engage. Thank you. Over to you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for your Diwali greetings. As you said, many are comments, so thank you very much for that. So, for example, your point, Honourable Member, about autonomy of accounting officers, you might want to write a page and send it to us and tell us what exactly you have in mind, because I think that will be absolutely useful. Honourable Niehaus's point about revenue collection in provinces and local government, crucial areas where perhaps we need to do more to help, although we have limited capacity. And DTI and its capacity to help emerging contractors, I think you should ask DTI to come and talk to you and see how ready they are. But generally, I think we could certainly do better. Mr. Mara, your point about how do we fund this, we fund whatever we want to fund within the limits of what's available. So we're not looking at some wild picture. We're saying, here's the fiscal framework, these are the demands that we have, if you can afford it, do it, if you can't afford it, wait. It's a simple principle. So there's no unsustainability issues that actually come into this equation. The wage subsidy is still a work in progress. And the NCBPS is precisely that. It's a budget policy statement. It's not a statement which is meant to cover every area, so I'm sure you'll understand that with your experience. On the FDI front, there's no doubt we need to attract more investment, but, you know, South African businesses are sitting with 300 billion rands of surpluses as well. And in climates like the one that we have, people tend to be more risk-averse, and so investment is not something that is readily available. Honorable Rabi, incentives to get people to work. I think we agree with the spirit of your approach, Mr. Rabi, which is let's get people to work rather than depend on welfare. Even the President has said that on many occasions. The question is how do we get the mechanics going? Khoshi Bashira, you've raised some very useful questions. Colleagues that are here will answer some of them, as you call it, the naughtiness of receiving departments. I like that phrase. But, you know, fiscal dumping is happening. Rollovers, we've tried to limit it as much as possible. On compensation, we've got to go through negotiations of two types, the usual annual negotiations, but also political discussions, which will help us to get this broad understanding going. And some of the colleagues will address the questions about municipalities and their behavior and the moratorium question. You know, toll roads have inspired a lot of emotion, so we don't want to agitate people some more. But roads will have to be built, infrastructure will have to be built, and we've got to keep that momentum going. We've got to sort out then who pays for what and in how do we make that kind of affordable exercise. Honorable Luyenge, sports facilities, Mr. Brown from the Treasury will address that. You've raised that issue before as well, so obviously you're a keen sports person. On the UIF question, it's something that we need to think about, as the Chair said. And the DG, I don't think we get information about IDC support, as far as I know, but the DG will address that. Chair and Honourable Members, thank you very much for your patience, and if you don't mind, I'm going to leave now.
Thank you very much, Minister, and thanks for your presence here. But what I'm going to suggest that, Honourable Members, we take 15 minutes comfort break. We come back. The remaining questions before we go to the next session, the Deputy Minister, the Director General, and the family of finance that is here will actually make a 10-minute comment on it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I have you want 5 minutes? All right, good. Very progressive. Thank you. 5 minutes, next stretch. But I had... I had 15 minutes on my program.
Yeah, my phone is about to die.